Welcome to the Crossroads Podcast, where I discover decision-making that creates success. Today, our guest is Dr. Keegan Donlan, who previously worked as a professor at Dominican University with a focus in molecular cancer biology and biomedical sciences. She is now a teacher at Marin Catholic High School and known to her students as Doc Don. She's a mother of four and resides in Marin County. Before we start, I wanted to talk about why I chose Doc Don to join us on the podcast. I first met this wonderful woman a year ago as the teacher for my anatomy class. I immediately fell in love with her engaging teaching style and enjoyed learning about her diverse and experienced background in the medical field. It seemed like she had lived a thousand lives and made some super interesting choices along the way. I have always been interested in medicine. Yes, I admit originally inspired by Dr. Meredith Gray and the crew at Seattle Grace Hospital on Grey's Anatomy. And I am curious to know about Doc Don's path as an educator in this field. Enjoy the podcast. But welcome to the Crossroads Podcast. We are so excited to have the fabulous, amazing Doc Don in front of us today. And let's just jump right into it.
Can't wait.
Starting with like your childhood, and tell us about where you grew up and if there were like any pivotal moments in your younger years that led to like where you are in your career now.
Oh, that's such a great question. I grew up in Southern California. Don't judge. And I grew up as the second of four kids, and I haven't actually thought about this question. It's such a good one. My parents were very religious and very like kind of what you think of as like old school fundamental religious.
Yeah.
And they homeschooled us because they didn't even trust like the Catholic schools to be like religious enough. They were very against science. Like they felt like science was the opposite of religion. Mm-hmm. And that kind of sucked for me because I was really drawn to science. Like,
yeah.
I just loved it. And I don't feel like it was a rebellion. It's just, that's like, my brain has always just asked a lot of questions about the natural world. Like I wanted to know how all the plants like opened and closed their leaves at night. Mm-hmm. And like, where do bugs go in the winter? And like, I just wanted all these answers and my parents didn't have the answers to, and this, you know, so old, there was no Google. So I had to go to the library, and all the books that answered my questions were science books. And so just like, I fell in love with science because it answered the questions that I had about the world. Mm-hmm. And so I think like that upbringing, this like idea that faith and science couldn't exist together, was kind of pivotal for me. And I think my rebellion was sort of that I just wanted to prove my parents wrong. I wanted to prove that you could be a person of faith and a person who lived morality and like lived like believing in God and still someone who really loved science, because I couldn't not study science. Like that was just what I had to, like, I had to learn more about it because that answered all the questions that I have, if that makes sense. So
yeah.
I think that was probably like my upbringing in like this deeply religious, deeply academic family that was mm-hmm. also deeply anti-science really formed me into like who I am, I think, and made a lot of the decisions for me in my life.
Yeah, that is so interesting. Was college the first time you ever weren't homeschooled, or did you integrate in like high school?
Yeah, no, I was homeschooled until I was 16. And when I was 16, I actually graduated high school early. Okay. My dad got really sick and we actually needed, I needed to work. So mm-hmm. I went to community college when I was 16 and worked like three jobs to help like cover things.
Wow.
And then I transferred to the UCs when I was 18 as a junior. So yeah, the first time literally I was ever in a classroom was when I was 16 and started college.
Yeah. Tell us about that like transition between going into homeschool and then working while also going to college.
It was hard. I always worked a little bit. Like I came from a family where my parents really believed that we should like have independence and have responsibility. So I had always nannied and babysat, mm-hmm. house set, and like worked in kids camps over the summer. My mom's best friend had a florist shop, and my other parent friend was a caterer. So I'd like help with weddings. So I always had worked. So that part of it wasn't so weird. Being in college was a trip though. And I went to there were two community colleges not super near where I lived, because I lived in a really like suburban place. And so one of the closest community college was Los Angeles Harbor College, which is right on the border of Compton. And so it was very different than where I had grown up, but it was the closest. And I just needed like the, like for me with my job, like I needed to not waste hours driving. And so I was like, obviously the youngest in my classes. I was 16.
Yeah.
I was also like usually the only like blonde like person.
Yeah.
I had a really different like worldview going into it. Mm-hmm. I found that so incredible. Like I had been so sheltered in this very religious bubble, and being exposed to all these ideas and all these people, and realizing, I think my first semester in college, I just remember realizing like everything my parents told me, like maybe none of it's true, because so much of it I realized wasn't true. And so that was kind of my struggle in college, was realizing all of these things that had been told to me my whole life, not all of them were true. So which parts were true? Because not all of it was false. And I knew that, because I knew that faith was real. And that was something that was very personal to me. But there was so much of it that had been blended in with that. And so extracting out the parts that weren't, like I met people who were Muslim in my classes, and they were lovely people, and they were American, and they weren't bad. And like, they also had a very true and real life-changing faith. And like, how did how do you rationalize that when you've been told your whole life, like these people are wrong and we're the right ones, and they, you know? So that was hard. Academically, it wasn't hard, because because I had been homeschooled and I was one of four, I had gotten really good at working independently, and college is a lot more independent. You know, your professors hey, chapter three, we're covering it next time, and they'll cover it like half of it, and you have to have read the rest of it and understand it. That part I was really prepared for, because I had done so much independent learning. So academically it was fine. It was more like the culture shock of realizing there's this big world out here full of like really wonderful, good people who are nothing like me. So how do I rationalize that with everything that I've just been fed my whole life?
Also at such a young age, like that is incredible. And then once you transferred to a bigger college, what was that like? And like, also I bet that widened your scope and view of life too.
Yeah, it did. So I transferred from there to UC Davis. And that was a big, that was my big, not rebellion, because I didn't do it to rebel, but I knew that I wanted to study science in a really deep way. When I was at the community college, I had applied for and gotten an internship at UCLA. So I had worked in this cancer research lab, and I just fell in love with it. And I knew that that was what I wanted to do. So I knew I needed to go to a school that had those sorts of resources for me, where I could work in a lab, where I could intern in a hospital. That's what I knew that I loved. My parents wanted me to go to a Catholic or a Christian school. That was it. That was all they wanted for me. And I went to some, and I was just like, I'm not going to be able to do what I want to do. Like, this school is going to make it harder for me to get to grad school or to get to med school. And I don't need a school that's going to like pave the way, but I need a school that's not going to make it harder for me to get there. And they were really opposed to that. Again, like their distrust of like science and higher education, they think, okay, fine, we're not, you can major in science, but you can do it at these like five. But I was also paying for my own education, so I couldn't afford to go to a lot of the schools that probably were religious that could have got me there. And so I decided I was going to go to the UC system, because I could transfer in, I could afford it. It would help me get to that next level. And they were really, really upset. So probably, honestly, the culture shock was big. The biggest shock was that my parents like basically wouldn't talk to me for 6 months after I started college. So I transferred at 18 as a junior, totally on my own, living in an apartment, like 21 units of upper division science while working, because I was putting myself through school. So I was like, I got all my general eds. So I had like 21 units of majors courses and a job and an internship, and I worked in the lab. And my parents just like were like, you're dead. They were so upset. They got over it.
I was gonna say, like, how did your relationship with your parents, like as you're like basically going against everything they've taught you the past like 18 years, and like how is that like navigating as you're like moving out and like moving, growing?
Yeah, it was really hard, because I wasn't rebellious. Like, I wasn't doing it like to thumb my nose at them. And I had tried so hard to communicate with them, like, you know, here's the statistics, like this school that like I can afford to go to, this like religious school, like they've never had a person go to med school. Like,
yeah,
that's something. Like, mm-hmm. I asked them, like, what are the average MCAT scores? Like, how do you prepare a student? And they're just like, looked mm-hmm. at me like I was crazy. I was like, so it wasn't like I was trying to like go against my parents wanted. And I think it was mm-hmm. really, it was honestly, that was a really hard choice to make. But ultimately, I knew that I was doing the right thing. And I really genuinely in my heart felt like I was doing what God wanted me to do. Like, I felt like mm-hmm. this like love of science that I have and this like interest and this passion for it, like, I'm not making that up. Like, that's not bad. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not evil. Like, that's part of me. And I believe that what makes us who we are, all things that God has given us. I was like, if God has yeah. given me this like insatiable interest in learning about science mm-hmm. and this hard major that I want to do, like, I have to follow that. Like, that's something he's made me to do. And if I don't do that, that's wrong. And my parents disagreed, but I just felt so strongly that it was where I was called to be. Like, I was supposed to study science. Like, I love it for a reason. I'm supposed to do something with this. I don't know what that is yet, but I need to follow this passion. The way I got through it is I really was doing it for the right reason. And I really in my soul believed that. And I think my parents ultimately saw that. Like, when I went away, I didn't change who I was. I didn't mm-hmm. like start becoming some like evil Satan.
Yeah.
No, like I was still who I was. I just mm-hmm. was a person who was studying science at a place that was going to help me get to grad school. And mm-hmm. I think it took them a while to accept that. I mean, honestly, I think they're still in some ways accepting that. Like I'm mm-hmm. not, I haven't taken the path that they wanted me yeah. to take. My parents told me that when I was getting my PhD, they're like, doesn't matter. You can get into Harvard. You can get the doctorate. You're never going to be as successful as your sister who got married mm-hmm. at 21 and had kids because that's what God wants women to do.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I disagree, and that's okay. Like we can disagree about that. So I think my ability to do it just came from the fact that I really felt like it was what I was supposed to do. And I felt like yeah. they were wrong. I still feel like they're wrong.
Yeah.
But I wasn't doing it as some way to somehow hurt them. It was really because mm-hmm. I felt like I was following what I was supposed to be doing. And there's a lot of, like, when you're doing something that you know is right, like mm-hmm. there's so much like freedom in that.
Yeah.
And that's really what I felt. So it was a culture shock going to Davis, but I think there was so much else going on mm-hmm. that I didn't really feel that. Like, I really quickly found my people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was so busy. I had like this ridiculous course load and I was working and commuting to the hospital and my yeah. parents kind of like worried about my parents. Like, I didn't even like, I don't know. I kind of had, I created mm-hmm. my own little bubble of just like sciencyness, and I yeah. was just happy.
As you like took this intense passion of yours, how did you transition into graduate and post-grad and like medical school and stuff like that? And tell us like about your journey through that.
When I graduated from Davis, I wanted to take a little time off because I had mm-hmm. been working the whole time and working so yeah. hard. Time off from like school. I didn't want to go straight to grad school. Mm-hmm. And I also really wasn't sure what I wanted to do. When I entered, I thought I had wanted to do just an MD. Mm-hmm. And I knew I wanted to do pediatric oncology because the labs that I had worked in had been all translational research and oncology. And I loved it. I loved it so yeah. much. Like, when I got that internship at UCLA, I'm like 17 years old, I would be the first person on campus at UCLA. And I'd have to, the cancer building would be locked. And like, mm-hmm. I'd have to call the security guard and like, he'd have to come let me in. By the second week, he made me a key to like the back of the cancer center, cause he was so tired of letting me in. And yeah. all these like postdocs and grad students were like, you have a key to the cancer center? Like, I've been here for years. And everyone's like, yeah, but you don't get here at dawn. Like, Keegan, like, I
yeah.
loved it so much. And so I thought, like, I love the research stuff so much. I'm going to love the clinical side of it so much. When I went to Davis, I got this amazing internship at the hospital, following doctors around, like the clinical mm-hmm. side of it. I did not love it. Like, I actually hated it. Like, I hated it. All I wanted to do was go back in the lab and do the research. And mm-hmm. I was like, I love the people, but like being a doctor, like being a clinical doctor, it's kind of sucks. Like, it sucks.
Yeah.
to me. Like
yeah.
And one of the doctors I shadowed, he's like, you don't want to be a doctor now. Like, you want to be a doctor 50 years ago. You can have like conversations, like really
yeah.
cheap things. He's like, you can't do that. Like, you like 10 minutes, you're doing rounds, you go in, you do this. And I was like, oh, that's horrible.
Yeah.
So I do all these amazing things. And the whole time I'm like looking at the clock, wondering when I can get back to lab and do the like science that I love.
Yeah.
So when I finished undergrad, I was like, so what do I do? Like, do I go to medical school and like be a pediatric oncologist, which I always wanted to do, knowing that 80% of the time in my lab, I'll be really happy. And then that 20% of the time, I won't love so much, but like, that's okay, right? Maybe. And I started thinking about it. I was like, yeah, there's already so many people who are doctors who are grumpy about being doctors because they don't love it. Like, the world doesn't need another one. But I just wasn't, exactly sure like where, like what, I don't know. It shifted it so much for me. Me not loving the patient side of oncology like I thought I would really threw me. And so I decided to take some time off. And so I worked for a biotech company. That's when I moved to China and I decided to just like travel around China and teach and just like figure out like when I go back, what am I going to do? And like, when I was in China, I met this like ridiculously funny group of expats from England. And one of the women, which is this old crotchety, swore like a sailor named Beverly. She was like 4 feet tall. Like, she was hilarious. And she's like, what are you going to do when you get back? Like, you're not like us. You're not going to travel for the rest of your life. What are you going to do? And I was like, I don't know. I was like, I have a lot of things I could do. Like, I had like thought about a bunch of different things. Like, and then, you know, I'm thinking like, maybe I just go and get my doctorate. And like, she's like, what would you get your doctorate in? And I was like, I don't know, like molecular oncology. She's like, is that an option for you? Like, you could just get a doctorate in molecular oncology. And I was like, yeah, like, I mean, I love it. Like, I just like, I could do that. She's like, well, this is the stupidest conversation I've ever had in my life. She's like, if you can get a doctorate in molecular oncology, then you need to do that. Like, you should always do the hardest thing. And I was like, oh, that's such interesting advice. She's like, anyone can like do this or that or whatever. She's like, none of us in this room could go and get into a PhD program and get a degree in like molecular oncology. That's ridiculous. So like, you're going to go do that because like, if that's what you can do, that's what you should do. And I was like, oh, that's actually like a really good like life framing thing. Like you should do the hardest thing, like do the thing that's like the most unique to you that not everyone else could do. And I was like,
that's such a good point.
I should do that. So that night I went, and I'm really into like, I feel like God, the universe like gives like signs when you're kind of aligned. So I went online, my little laptop in China, just like looking like, I was like, okay, well, if I wanted to do that, I'd want to be home for a while first, save some money, figure out where I want to apply. So I'd want to be living, my parents live in LA. So I just started like looking up like job listings in LA, like doing like biotech stuff like I've been doing before. And there is a job opening at Children's Hospital, Los Angeles, in a pediatric oncology lab studying the same cancer that I had been studying at UCLA. And it was like someone who worked in that lab who moved to another hospital. And I was like, well, that's crazy. What are the chances of that? Like this rare bone cancer and they need someone at my level immediately. So I emailed the guy. I was like, hey, so I'm in China, blah, blah, blah. He went back like immediately. He's like, how fast can you be back? I would love to interview you. And I was like, okay, maybe it's time for me to go home from China and like think about like, this next phase of my life. So it just felt like the right thing to do. So once I like left China and made that choice, it was just, that was it. It was easy.
The universe just like aligned.
Yeah, exactly. But don't you feel like that's what happens? Like, I feel like sometimes you're not sure. And then once you decide something, there's like, once you take like that step, like the universe is like, oh, I've been waiting for you. And just kind of like push you along. I feel like that's happened to me so many times in my life. Like once you kind of step into the current, you just kind of get carried and you're like, okay, now this is where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. And then like once you got to grad school and like we're like working towards your PhD, was there anything that like helped you? Like were there any habits you had or like anything that you did that you felt like made you really successful and able to get your PhD and graduate?
Grad school was really hard for me. Grad school is like different for everybody. And there's a lot of things that made it challenging. I had a mentor who was not very involved. And so that made it challenging. He wasn't very present. And so I think feel like it took me a lot longer sometimes, like find my way without like having so much guidance. But I think what really helped me the most is sort of, I think what started it all is I just really loved it. Like even when it was frustrating, even when like I couldn't get my papers published or I was like beating my head against a problem I couldn't solve. Like, I just remember just being so excited to be there. Like, I was like, this is my job right now. Like, I get to solve scientific problems. Like, it's so fun. Like, honestly, it's the most fun thing in the world. I was like, this is so cool. Like, I never outgrew that, like, first in lab at UCLA when I was 17. Like, I just loved being in the lab. I just loved doing science. And it felt like, because like I was doing something that I really love. And I think that if you find something that you genuinely enjoy doing, even the drudgery is okay, because you're doing something you enjoy doing and it's getting like to somewhere where you get to do it more. And like, I just genuinely enjoyed it. So even when it was hard, I still found the fun in it.
As we know, you're a teacher now. And so how did you get from getting your PhD and all of this research into teaching?
So when I finished my PhD, I actually defended my dissertation when my oldest, Rory, was 3 months old. So Bobby and I met right before I was finishing up my research. I finished it up, and then a couple years later, when I was ready to defend, I had a little baby. And so I had a decision. After you get your PhD, you can do what's called a postdoctoral fellowship, which is another like 4 to 7 years in a lab, working all the time, doing science, and then eventually like become a full professor at a place like UCSF or Stanford, like a big research hospital. And like kind of sat down with Bobby and we're like, okay, so what do we do? Like, what are we doing? And he's like, I'll go wherever you go, like apply. And I started thinking about it and I was like, I love the science. I love talking about science. I love sharing the science. Like, obviously like lights me up. I get super jazzed about science. But I really want to be present in my family, and finding that balance is hard. And that, I think that's possible. As a young, like tenure track research hospital professor, but certainly not common and not modeled for me. Like it's like 80-hour weeks and you're making like maybe $40,000 a year and you've got to publish all these papers to get to the next level. And it's very high. Like those are the most important years of your career. And I was like, I don't want my baby to be raised by a nanny. Like I want to be there and find a way to do both. So while I had been at UCSF, I had realized how much I liked teaching. There was like a small TA requirement. I had to TA like half a semester or something. And after my TA, I was like, can I do more? And like, my boss was like, no, you can't do more. Like you're supposed to be working in the lab. And I was like, well, what if I do it on my own time? He's like, what is wrong with you? So I always taught while I was at UCSF and I loved it. And so I got a job offer with someone that I had taught with at UCSF who was at San Francisco State. And so I decided to like do a little bit of lab work, but mostly focus on teaching so that I could be present with Rory. And I missed the bench. I missed being like at the lab bench and doing all of that. But I found that teaching actually like excited me almost as much as doing like getting to talk about it and getting to share it. And stepping away from being full-time in the lab was really, really hard because that's what I'd been training to do for like 7 years and I was really good at it. And stepping away from that type of research and focusing just on the teaching felt like such a big switch. I had this like group of students that first year that were just so adorable and so amazing. And like just the cute, I'm still in touch with some of them. A couple of them are in dental school. Like they're just the best.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And I every day I came home and I was like, oh, it was so fun. I love you. It just was such a positive experience that it kind of, I felt like, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be and what I'm supposed to be doing. And I really loved teaching science at a high level and being able to like communicate to my students the things they needed to know from like my background as a researcher, particularly when I was teaching like molecular pathophysiology and some of these like really like deep upper division electives. Like it really helped to have a molecular biology background and I could explain things to them in a way that like other teachers didn't really the same way. so yeah, I loved it. And so the transition from the bench was hard, but it was right, because I knew mm-hmm. that I wanted balance in my life. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to give up my love of science and my expertise in science, but I didn't want to give up the time with my kids. And it is hard to balance that. It is hard.
Yeah. I was going to say, you do it very well. I feel like you always are just balancing it all. And I was wondering, like, how do you balance having four kids and working and just getting everything done?
Well, that's really sweet. I don't feel balanced most of the time, but I think I have a really good partner. Having mm-hmm. a husband or a partner who's in it with you is really important. And I think mm-hmm. both of us have jobs we really love, and we both yeah. are very in the trenches with the kids. It's not like mm-hmm. I do all the stuff and he helps. Like, we are both doing all the stuff. Yeah. That's super essential. When I was at UCSF, the year that Liz Blackburn won the Nobel Prize. And she's an incredible researcher who mm-hmm. discovered telomeres and telomerase shortening, which is fascinating. Yeah. And I got to hear her speak after she got the Nobel Prize, and she's a mom and this woman in science, and she wasn't super mm-hmm. old. Like, she won the Nobel Prize with a kid, in elementary. Yeah. And they were like, how do you, and I still remember this, and I think about this all the time. She said, how do you do work-life balance? Like, how do you do that? And she's like, mm-hmm. it's never balanced day to day. Like, if you look at yeah. the days, they're not balanced. Like, it's all work, or it's more work, or I'm focusing too much at home and work's falling through the cracks. But she said, you've got to give yourself the long view. Like, if you zoom out, yeah. that's where the balance is. Like, it's never balanced in the moment. But then she goes, when I'm with my family, I am with my family. And when I'm at work, I'm at work. And I just try to be where I'm needed in a very mindful way. And that the balance is over time, because there are weeks where I'm just way too focused on work. And then there are weeks mm-hmm. where I'm probably not responding to emails fast, way too focused at home. But then mm-hmm. you just hope that over the course of life that it's balanced. So I think that's what I try to do. I just grind at work, mm-hmm. all my preps. And if I don't have any students at CATS, that's when I grade, that's when I plan. I try to take as little work home as I can mm-hmm. so that when I'm home, I can just really be home with the kids. Yeah. And then all the work I do after they go to sleep. So when I'm home and it's they're up, and I'm with them. So that's mm-hmm. how I try to do it. And it ebbs and flows. Yeah. The nice thing is the summer I get to be with them, mm-hmm. and I have prep and stuff, but it's not so crazy during the summer.
I need to tell the people who are listening to this, her kids have no screen time. So this is also incredible. There's no iPad, no nothing. You had an offer from Cal last year and Marin Catholic. Talk us through the decision of choosing Marin Catholic over the University of Berkeley.
So I went from San Francisco State to Dominican, mm-hmm. which is a small, Catholic school really close yeah. by. And when I thought about, I'd been there for a while, maybe going somewhere else, and had the academics. So to get a faculty position at the University of California, the Academic Senate has to meet and approve your faculty appointment. Mm-hmm. So I had gotten the job offer and was waiting for Academic Senate approval, and had a conversation with Valdez, with the principal, 100% just because Mark and Sally Yeager were like, you have to go talk mm-hmm. to Chris. And to Chris, they were like, you need to talk to our friend. He's like, all right. There wasn't a job in the science department open. Mm-hmm. And he said that at the beginning of the meeting. He's like, I don't have a job for you. And I was like, that's cool. I don't want a job. I have a job at Berkeley. But after this conversation, just talking about faith and science, and my husband had gone to Marin Catholic, and it was a place we were connected to because of our friends who teach there, and we go to mm-hmm. basketball games there all the time. I walked out of that meeting with Chris, and I just thought, what am I doing? My whole life I've made choices that align with my values and with what I feel like I've been called to do, and what mm-hmm. feels like, how am I using my gifts and what's unique to me in a way that glorifies God, makes the world better. I just feel we all need yeah. to make choices about how are we spending our time? How am I making life better for the people around me, for the world, for the community? And I've done that. I did that when I chose teaching over mm-hmm. Bench science. And I did that when I chose Dominican over when I was making that decision. I've always made those choices. when I walked out of that meeting, I was like, I mean, Berkeley is the next like right thing, right? Mm-hmm. That's, but I've never made choices in my life that way. Like I've never done what I'm supposed to do because of like whoever says, like I've always followed what I feel is right and what aligns with my values. And mm-hmm. I feel like I'm a really good science teacher. I love science. I love doing science. I love talking about science. And like, I should use that gift in my community if I can. Like I could drive to mm-hmm. Berkeley and do it. And like, I would love it. And the students would love me and it would be great. But what if I could do that here? Like yeah. 10 minutes from my house with kids that all run into the grocery store and like see when they're home for Christmas when they're 25. Like, wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be cool to yeah. build something in my community? And then if my boys go to Marin Catholic, wouldn't it be amazing to have this community built there for them where like mm-hmm. they feel like they belong, and I could build the science, maybe I could make the science program even better. Maybe I could build this into something that could really be something beautiful and lasting for the community. And in a way that aligns with my values. Like I could yeah. be in a place where we can talk about hard things and we can discuss things that you can't say in most college classrooms, mm-hmm. right? And like this idea of like being able to be authentically who I am and communicate science in this like place that my kids are going to be part of felt very aligned with mm-hmm. like my values and with what I'm trying to build in my family. I'm a good science teacher and maybe I could do that in a way that can make the world a little better right near where I live. And my little yeah. sister said something really pressing to me. I never went to high school, so mm-hmm. but she actually did, like my parents, that things had changed yeah. at home by the time she was in high school. And she said, Keegan, I have a couple college professors who like I think about and like impacted me. But she's like, I am who I am today because of teachers in high school. Yeah. She's like, you could be that person to so many people. She's like, you don't even mm-hmm. understand how in high school, like having a good teacher can change you so much. She's like, I think you could change the world by being a good high school teacher. And I was like, well, that's dramatic, but it's like, yeah, I mean, that's like a way to think about it. Like by the time I get students in college, like they already know what they want to major in. I was teaching mm-hmm. major classes, you know, they already,
yeah.
Where, and I was like, that's kind of exciting to think of being part of someone's life before they're sure what they want to do and like help yeah. them figure it out, help them see what's possible, maybe help them love science in maybe a way that they didn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was my thought process. It just felt like, I feel like a lot of big decisions are just a chance to take inventory and kind of figure mm-hmm. out what path have I been on? Like, do I want to continue on it? Like mm-hmm. Who do I want to be? And am I making the choices that are allowing me to be that person? Am I turning into who yeah. I want to be by making these choices? Mm-hmm. And I want to be someone who models what I hope my kids do. I want to yeah. be someone who like models like authentically living in community. And mm-hmm. that's what I want for my kids, what I want for myself. It's what my husband and I are trying to build. And it just felt like kind of an easy decision once I reframed it in my head and kind of stepped back from like the, oh my gosh, who would say no to Cal? And I was like, I could actually really easily say no to Cal when I actually think about what I could do here.
Yeah. Wow. That is so powerful. Our wrapping up, what is just one piece of advice? You've given us so many like thoughtful and insightful things, but what is just one piece of advice you have for anybody listening as you look back at all these crossroads in your life and how you've navigated them?
I would say, I think that a lot of times I think we put a lot of stock into like the big choices, like the, where are you going to go to school or like, who are you going to marry or the career? And those are all really important, but I feel like who we are and the most important decisions are probably the little day-to-day ones that we don't think about. Like, mm-hmm. are you going to be patient when your mom's bothering you? Are you going to participate in that gossip? Are you going to like do that extra thing at work when no one's looking? Mm-hmm. Like the little decisions we make that we don't spend a lot of energy on are actually what make us who we are. And then when we come up with these big decisions, we spend all this time and energy, but all those are really doing is kind of illuminating the path that you're already on. Like the two things you're deciding between are things that, you know, you've already set yourself up for because of all these like little unthought about decisions that you've made every day, right?
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes we forget that the big decisions are made up of all these little decisions. And it's mm-hmm. just kind of a chance to take an assessment and decide, like, who do I want to be? And like, what are my values? And how are these big choices going to support me in being that person that I want to be? And I think if you think about it that way, most big decisions you can break down and make them pretty easily. At least that's what I found.
Thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Well, I hope you enjoyed today's episode with Dr. Keegan Donlan. If you did, similar content can be found on my page, and do not hesitate to reach out with any comments or questions. See you next time.